Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
With a grain of Delmarva, con artists may view the peninsula as easy pickings. Welcome to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and we turn our attention this morning to how these schemes can affect the elderly. What can you do to protect yourself? And more importantly, with many boomers becoming their parents' primary caregivers, how to protect your loved ones from these kinds of scams. In our studio, our guests are Peggy Bradford. She's executive director of MAC Incorporated, Area Agency on Aging for the Lower Shore Counties. Also, Terry Davidson, director of MAC's Maryland Access Point, and Cheryl Sinkbell, an ombudsman with MAC, who advocates for those living in long-term care facilities. And welcome to you all. Well, Peggy, I want to start with you. How serious is this, particularly as people move past the age of 65? They're not perhaps as quick as they used to be, or life certainly gets a lot more complicated, limited incomes. How serious of a problem is this?
Well, certainly scam artists have identified the elderly as a target group. Many live alone, so when they get a phone call, they're anxious for company. So that's one way scam artists actually gain their confidence. But scams are increasing. Every day we get news of some different scam coming down the road, and older people need to be careful.
And how do you guard against this, just sort of generally in terms of, particularly if you're living alone, as you say, you want to talk to somebody. But aside from that, I mean, how do you deal with this? Make sure that you're not, and you have some mindset that you will not be subject to these kinds of scams.
I guess I have to say, don't trust anyone that you don't know. If a stranger approaches you, somebody calls and tells you they're from your bank or wherever, your credit card company, and they ask you for any kind of information, where it would be account number, social security number, address. I mean, qualified institutions have that number. They don't need to call you for that. So be very distrustful of people you don't know asking for information that should be private.
So what kind of scams are there? I mean, I identified a lot of them, but I mean, for instance, say just simply in terms of health care, what kind of scams are there? Cheryl, you deal with long-term care and that kind of thing, and Medicare and so on. What's to look out for?
What I see sometimes in nursing homes and assisted livings is sometimes their family has actually spent their money and they didn't even know it. There's been cases where there's been financial exploitation, and they've signed things, had no idea what they're even signing, power of attorneys and deeds and things, and as a result of that, they don't have that property. They don't have that resource they thought could pay for their care. So then when they try to apply for medical assistance and other services, sometimes they're denied because they have a 5-year look-back period, and sometimes they thought they could pay, or if they ran out of money, they'd be able to get medical assistance. And they find there's a penalty period. It's not their fault. They're the victim.
And I mean, how do you, if you've been talking to the people that you deal with, what do you tell them in terms of how to make sure that this doesn't happen? I mean, talking a moment ago here with Peggy saying don't trust anybody, but now we're talking about people that you would normally trust.
Well, I think people need to talk to an elder care attorney and to really plan well, to have things spelled out in advance. You know, have their living will and their will and all their paperwork and things in order. Make sure they appoint a power of attorney that they can trust. Make sure they have someone. It might not be your spouse or your child. It might be someone totally different who's going to follow your wishes and that you can really trust. And sometimes you see caregivers come in, and there's some excellent caregivers out there, but sometimes their own loved ones or might be doing the caregiving. And they might find down the road, a check bounced. Gee, why'd that happen? Well, my money's not there anymore. That I gave some money to my grandson to buy my groceries and do things for me during the winter months. And he'd buy his groceries, but then he'd also take some money for himself. And the account got really dwindled, and they were totally oblivious to it because they trusted that loved one.
Also, Terry, what about this issue about scams and how they affected the elderly?
Well, like Peggy said, many times people living at home are lonely, and when a phone call comes or someone comes to the door, they're so delighted to have a visitor that oftentimes they will just buy right into whatever they're selling. So it's very important for us to get the word out for them to be careful and be wary. There's no reason for a person to give out their social security number over the telephone, yet we find that a lot of people are doing just that. So I think being wary is the most important thing.
So I was reading some of this. One of the ideas that was put forward was the idea, sort of exposure to sales situations, that people will find themselves, whether it's send out for free promotional materials, mm-hmm. or entering drawings, that kind of thing. I mean, is that part of the problem for the elderly, that they combine not only the fact that they oftentimes will be isolated, they can't get out as much, at the same time they get these situations where they're really sort of a sales kind of exposure, as it were?
Often. I think you you need to be leery of anything that really looks too good. People will get something in the mail and say, "You're a winner, fill this out, you know, send this back in," and there'll be another response. You know, you're a winner. It may cost you $5, $10, or whatever to find out what you've won. The old saying is always the correct one. If it's too good to be true, it's not true. With health care, you have to be pretty savvy and look at the information, that the bills that you get. Medicare's will send you sort of a summary notice, an explanation of benefits, what was paid, and take a look at that. Particularly with durable equipment, that's things like walkers, wheelchairs. That's a high fraud area. Unethical suppliers will bill for equipment that the individual never received, or an unethical physician may bill for services that were never delivered. So you need to be a savvy consumer.
In terms of that, I mean, are there people, because one of the things that was reading is that are there people that then come out, will call you and say that they, say, for instance, represent Medicare, that kind of thing? Have you run across that?
Actually, we're the place to call. Which is probably why we're here today. We have, in terms of health care, we have a counselor for our senior health insurance counseling program who will look at those statements, look at those bills, be an advocate on your behalf. And sometimes it may just be an innocent billing error on behalf of the doctor or the hospital that did the billing. But we can certainly intercede on your behalf. We have lots of folks in our agency with resources to help folks. So, don't be embarrassed. And that's a key to why scams work. Older people are embarrassed that they might have been scammed. Often with financial scams, I worked with an elderly woman a few years back who was hooked up with an unethical stockbroker who did a lot of buying and selling of her stocks at the end of the year, and she got charged huge commissions. And when we looked into it, indeed, she had been taken advantage of. But she didn't want to pursue it because she was embarrassed. She was afraid she would appear unknowledgeable in front of her peers. But I say, go get them.
Sure. What about that in terms of the medical field? The same kind of thing? People get embarrassed?
Of course. How it's so humiliating. It's so embarrassing to think that someone you trusted and loved perhaps misused your resources. I mean, and then they can't pay for their care, and that's just very difficult. And I recently heard a policeman say at a meeting that, anytime you see something where it says, "Send us money and you'll get more money," don't trust any of those, because we've had a lot of those. Someone say, your grandson's in jail and, he needs bail or bond money, and they sent the money. And then 2 days later, the grandson calls and says, "Hi, Grandma, how are you?" I'm like, "Aren't you in jail?" "No." They never see that money again. So that's happened. I think the financial exploitation has really increased because the times are so difficult.
Peggy?
Well, I've sitting here thinking of all different kinds of scams and things that we've seen. Home improvement scams. Spring is coming. And the way that works, usually someone will come up and knock on the door and say, oh, we're in the neighborhood doing such and such. It might be putting blacktop on roofs and driveways. Those are two big scams. And while we're here, we can do your property at such and such a cost. And usually it's a greatly reduced rate. And when you find out the materials were either substandard, not even meant for the job, the quality of the job was poor, people didn't have a home improvement license. So there are a lot of home improvement scams. There's some bank frauds kind of go on. There was a woman that I worked with a few years back, and this is a scam that's been around forever, who was in a shopping mall, and somebody approached her and said, oh, look, I just found this wallet with all this money in it. What should I do with it? And will you help me? And the con artist convinces the person that they're going to take the money to the bank and give me your account number. And once the police clear it, we'll split it. Well, once they have the account number, they've cleared out the money from the account. Don't trust strangers.
One of the things that was mentioned to me was that it's called sort of the grandparent scam, where there is someone who tries to pass themselves off as a grandchild of some kind and calls up and sort of manipulates the conversation to get a name and some kind of other identification, and then takes that identification and then kind of runs with it. Have you found that to be true?
I heard that happen one time. A grandmother got a phone call and said that her grandchild was in trouble and needed, say, $1,000. And of course that caught her off guard, and she thought about how much she loved her granddaughter, and she sent the money right in without thinking twice about it. I also think it's very important for adult family members to just take care of their parents every now and then, stop in and see if there's anything that their parents want them to look at as far as mail or bills. These medical bills can be crazy. They're very hard to decipher. So sometimes the older adult family member can help them out.
Yeah. Also, I guess there's also some scams that center around really sort of funeral and cemeteries as well. You guys run into any of that at all? Because I understand that they'll come and they'll, for instance, look at the obits and then come the relative of whoever's died is then told that the person who died owes X amount of dollars to them for whatever that was promised, and people get taken in that way. Hmm. I mean, it's just one of those unusual things that I ran across.
I could see that happening. I've not personally seen a case like that, but it's kind of like identity theft, and I could see that. If there's a will, there's a way, I could see that happening.
The scammers will use anything available to them, whether it be the internet, the telephone, mail. U.S. mail,
knock on your door.
Knock on your door. They're going to use all means possible to part you with your money. Be very, very questionable, quizzical of anybody who approaches you in any of those ways.
Now, also, there's this telemarketing, which seems to be a big thing, and it can really sort of, even for anybody who's not older, it can be a real enticement to do. And I, as a matter of fact, I've gotten calls about you've won a cruise, right? Tickets, and you just, now for me, I'm sitting there saying, I'm going to hang up. But what about telemarketing? Is that a serious issue, particularly for older people, perhaps? And we'll get to the computers in a moment, but who are much more familiar with, say, buying something over the phone or using the phone for that kind of thing.
I would say definitely. I know a lady who's 89, and she's like a family member, actually, and she was getting lots of calls like that. And her family finally became aware of what was happening. So now all her phone calls go through an answering machine, so they can screen all her calls, and the family can hear them, because she was getting all these calls from telemarketers and stuff, and she was spending money left and right, and she was sending things, you know, to people, and family became aware of it after several months had gone by. So now, you know, when she gets calls, they all go through the screen through an answering machine, so make sure that she's not, unless she knows that voice and knows who that person is before she'll pick it up.
One rule that somebody's always told me is that whatever you, whenever you talk to somebody, particularly as a telemarketer, the one word you don't want to say is yes, no matter what. Is that true? Do you think that's just a good policy? No matter what it is.
I remember that.
Well, what we sometimes advise older people, because older people have a great concern about being polite, and they'll listen to the spiel,
right.
And they don't want to hang up. Because that's, you know, that's not how they were raised. That's impolite. So rather than, you know, slamming the phone down, we tell them just push the off button. That's easier to do than putting the phone back in the cradle. But the telemarketers are probably the worst. And once a person has bought in, they'll call back again and again. They become almost a friend. And that's a sad part. There's no friend there.
Right. It's just, yeah. I mean, particularly as we talked about before, this sort of plays on this sort of need for friendship and mm-hmm. outreach, and there they are. Now, one of the new phenomena, obviously, is the internet and computers. Mm-hmm. How dangerous is the computer to someone who is older when it comes to scams?
The danger is there for everybody. One of the reasons, when I sit down at work, every day I'm bombarded with a couple of hundred of these things. And the reason I can usually tell they're scams because I get 30 of the same scam. But, you know, it might be what they call phishing, where the scammer will pose as, usually it might be your credit card company, they might pose as your bank, and they've got the emblem down perfect. And they make you think, oh, I've been getting one lately where the scammer has been posing as a telephone company, telling me that, you know, this is the bill for the month for your cellular phone, you know, and then I get six of them. It looks so authentic. You know, your bank probably isn't going to have you click on something and enter your account number. So, you know, If you think that it might be legit, call your bank, call your credit card company, call whoever is putting forth that that email that you have to make sure indeed that is legit. Don't just respond to something that looks like the real thing, because it may not be.
Terry, what do you think about that?
I agree with Peggy. I think the most important thing we can teach them is to question things. Don't just accept what you're hearing or seeing. Just question it. Make sure it's accurate. I think a lot of people are embarrassed to do that.
Do you think that because it's all printed out, I mean, of course, we've just talked about the telemarketing thing, which is very, but when some people see things that are printed out, do you think it has much more authority than distant people than if just they're talking to somebody?
Yeah, I think they think it's legit. I mean, hey, it's all printed out. It looks like you said, it looks very looks like a logo and a real thing, and signed by somebody and dated, and looks very professionally done. And sure,
this time of year, a frequent fishing kind of thing you might get internet is from supposedly from the IRS saying, "Yeah, got your tax return. You owe X amount of dollars. You know." Mm-hmm. Give us your account number and we'll do an automatic withdrawal. Well, the IRS doesn't communicate with you that way, but it looks so real. You know, even some of the most sophisticated people can't discern, is it real or isn't it? And that's why I say always, always check it out.
As a matter of fact, I understand, I saw one recommendation, particularly for older people, although I suppose it applies to everyone, is to file your tax returns actually early. Because one of the scams is to get somebody's ID, file for the taxes or whatever it is, and they get some money back, and you're like sitting there with a problem on your hands. So, I mean, that's one of the things that happens, I guess, in the tax season. Also, what about reverse mortgages? You know, every time I turn around the TV, there they are, I don't know, some star telling me how you can get a reverse mortgage. obviously, there are legitimate reverse mortgage companies. How do we distinguish between the two, do you think?
Between what's real and
what's
not.
Yeah, what's real and what isn't?
Well, each person that applies for a reverse mortgage has to go and have a question and answer session with a counselor, with a home equity conversion mortgage counselor. So that's one way that the legitimacy is looked at. Whenever someone comes in to talk to me about a reverse mortgage, I urge them to go slow. It's a process that will affect them for the rest of their lives. So I really urge them to look at all other options before they choose that. But it is an option for a lot of people. And it can be a good option. I've seen it work well, and I've seen it not work so well.
Give me an example of both.
Well, I had a client who, they were senior citizens, and he was his wife's caregiver. She had severe dementia, and they were house rich and cash poor. He wanted his wife to remain in the home and have 24-hour care. So he was able to get a reverse mortgage and use that money to keep her there until she passed away. The older a person is, the better a reverse mortgage will be. You have to be at least 62, but I always urge younger people to look at other options before they use the equity in their home, because once you use it up, it's gone for good.
And what happened? Is there a bad situation that you run across that?
Just where a person has been younger. I think this gentleman was 68, and he did get a reverse mortgage, and he used the equity in his home, and now he really has nothing to fall back on. It's gone.
People are living to, 90, 95.
Exactly.
To 100. Mm-hmm. People are living a lot longer. So you've got a lot more years to consider than it used to have to do.
So just sort of running out, as it were.
Running out of your income.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about something like annuities? Because I know that one particular example of my own family, that my father had some annuity, and basically it pays out, I'll tell my mother now, on a regular basis, is not a big giant amount, but on a regular basis, and will pay out until forever, even if it passes the amount of money that they put in. I mean, is that a good deal, I guess, or in terms of annuities? That's kind of
thing. I think each person's financial situation is indeed unique, and don't just listen to the person who's trying to sell you the product or make the investment for you. Go to an independent third party, whether it be an elder law attorney, and we have some good elder law attorneys in this town, or just any attorney, or your accountant. Don't listen to the salesman and make your final determination based on that. You need to look at your whole financial picture before you lock into an annuity or any type of investment, and what you need to project what your cash needs are going to be. Don't do impulse spending.
Do you think that becomes harder and harder as you get older? As you move past, into your 60s and your 70s? Or does it just simply vary with the individual?
What we see is we've had a family often where it's been one spouse, and it's usually the husband, but not always, who has been making the financial decisions for the family, paying the bills, doing the investments, and then that spouse dies. And the other spouse is at a loss, doesn't know what to do, how to proceed, is very vulnerable. And that's probably the best time for a scammer to pop in. That's when you need to go to your attorney, your financial advisor, someone indeed that you can trust.
Now, one of the things, by the way, one of the small things I understand is that one of the big scams is anti-aging products. Is that a big deal? Have you run across this problem here?
We wish we could find some.
We would market it. I have not personally run across that at all.
No, I can't say I have either.
I have seen the catalogs. Once you hit ARPH, you get on the mailing list for every catalog for every ailment and device going, and you'll see in these catalogs all sorts of devices, creams, whatever, that will reverse aging. We can't reverse aging, but we may want to try. We may long for our more youthful years, but check with your physician. Check with your physician.
And one of the things that was described, in addition to age, characteristics of people who may be more vulnerable are people who may, for instance, are risk-taking, or that they may have some low self-control, I guess, and inclined to do one thing or another. Is that the kind of thing that one should look out for? Or particularly if you're, I mean, one of the things that we opened this show with is talking about how, you know, what boomers can do, because, mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of them are now taking care of their parents, mm-hmm. who have been in control mm-hmm. of their lives all of their lifetime. Is that an issue there with people who might want to take more risks, or might not trust other people, you know?
I can kind of give you an example. Mm-hmm. I worked with a family last year, and the gentleman's mother lived alone, 100% competent, we thought was pretty savvy about taking care of herself. But she was addicted to TV shopping. And I don't know if you probably don't watch these TV shopping shows, but if you do, you get to call in and you talk to these people, and they're your friends, and you talk about how wonderful the product is. And he went to his mom's house, and he opened up the closet in the guest room, and there must have been 50, 60 boxes of things that she had ordered from TV shopping. And here we thought somebody, you know, thought she was, you know, competent and open. She was. But her personality was such that it was an addictive type personality, and she was literally addicted to shopping channels. And that's somebody I would never have suspected that.
What should boomers do now that they're taking care of their parents? I mean, what kinds of things that they should do to make sure that they're okay? I mean, should they be taking over paying bills? Should they be, I mean, obviously it's, you know, depends upon the individual, of course, but are there any general rules about that? Or,
well, you need to have the proper legal documents in place, advance directives, powers of attorney. So they need to sit down with their parents and see, you know, what kind of legal documents do you have? You know, what if something happens and you're not able to make decisions on your behalf? You know, who's the best person to make those decisions? If you become incapacitated, you know, medically, what do you want? These are all things that you can plan for in advance. Same way with funerals, that type of thing. You know, don't do it in a time of crisis. Make your plans when there's not a crisis that you're going through, when you can think level-headed.
Yeah, I advise people while they're alert and oriented and able to make those decisions, whether they're a resident in their own home or assisted living or a nursing home, but while you're able to make those decisions and put them in writing, and all those things Peggy was talking about, those advanced directive decisions and everything. So what happens is people don't, and they wait, and then you have a crisis occur, and you may have a family that has, you know, 5 children, and they don't agree with each other about what's in the best interest of mom and dad. And it becomes a fight, and it's going to court and sometimes going to guardianship. And a lot of that could have been avoided if there'd just been some better pre-planning, you know, had done with power of attorneys, medical and financial. Again, as someone that you trust, and just have kind of your ducks in a row, have things in order, can make a big difference. But do it while you're young. Do it now. Do it as soon as you're 18 or over. Don't wait, you know, because I could go out here today and have an accident, you know, and not be here tomorrow. So. Yeah. We never know.
If you're a boomer, go get your parent and sit down. Schedule a time for them to have those documents in place. Begin the discussion. Mm-hmm. Cheryl says, so often we see families come in who have very different ideas about treatment for mom or dad.
Is it advisable to have somebody who's principally responsible? And, I mean, you might have other siblings, but to someone who should be designated as really sort of the person who's having to make the decisions, whether it's decisions obviously at the end of life or even, you know, just taking care of business, as it were, real quickly?
I recommend someone have a power of attorney. Name one person to be power of attorney, but also have a backup person, because something happens to that one you name, and you've got somebody else as a backup. sometimes joint things, not easy to go through well, too well. But it's always good to have the name, even on the forums these days, I'll have the one person, but then have a place where you can name at least two backup people as well. You know, if something happens, that person, then that ends the power of attorney, and then you're kind of stuck again. So it's good to have somebody else's name as a backup on those forms as well.
We've been speaking with Peggy Bradford. She's the executive director of MAC Incorporated, an area agency, deals with aging for the Lower Shore Counties. Also Terry Davidson, director of MAC's Maryland Access Point, and also Cheryl Sinkbell, ombudsman with MAC, who advocates for those living in long-term facilities. You've been listening to Delmarva. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.